Hi, everyone. Thank you for tuning into the Becker's Healthcare Dental DSO podcast. I'm Brian Zimmerman, Senior Director of Client Content and Strategy with Becker's Healthcare. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by Dr. Michael Shalaba, Vice President of Clinical Affairs at 42 North Dental. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so let's dive right in here. Just to start off, and so our listeners can really appreciate your perspective, can you talk a bit about your own professional background and current work?
Sure. So professional background, started a long time ago when I decided to go the business route and then go to dental school. So long story short is that I was always interested in medicine and dentistry, but I always was intrigued by the business side of things because of my dad being a neurosurgeon and having to run a private practice at the same time. He always complained about the inefficiencies and not having a good manager or knowing how to run a practice really well. I took that with, let me learn about the business side of things while also still engaging in what I really had a passion about was medicine and dentistry. So I went to, undergraduate finance degree. And at Boston College. And while I was in my third year, I explored different opportunities in medicine. And I was working in the emergency room, midnight shift, and experiencing a lot, learning what types of fields I wanted to go into. And I decided dentistry was the field I wanted to go to because of you really were able to help people and make them smile and give them confidence and really drive helping people while also being able to apply the things I've learned in school on running a business. So there was one specific incident in my college career where I volunteered for a place called the Campus School. It was at BC. It was a school for kids who were, physically challenged. And they were very difficult to communicate with. They used computer programming. At the time, it was cutting edge, where it followed their eyesight to allow them to type. And this was back in the 90s. So the Eagle Eyes program had a student that he wasn't happy. And there was one day I was sitting there and I was volunteering and he wasn't there. And I asked the teacher at the program, I said, "So where's Joe?" And they said, "Oh, he's at Children's Hospital getting his teeth out. He had an infection." Well, lo and behold, the kid came back and he was a different kid. He was just like smiling ear to ear, and just happy as a clam. And at that point, I said, what dentistry was able to do for this kid and to take, he wasn't able to communicate really clearly what was his problem was. But when he was treated and I saw how much an effect dentistry can have on an individual, it really said, it solidified to me the decision to make that dentistry was a career path for me. So at that point in time, I decided to apply to dental school. And I did that for, for 4 years, obviously. And then I did a 2-year residency. And anyone I talk with, I really try to drive home dentistry. There are so many different opportunities, but very similar to how I applied. I wanted to go to business school, learn about the business, to apply to run a business. I took the dentistry. I said, what do I want to do? And when I talk to colleagues and I talk to people coming out of school, I always ask them, what is it that you really have a passion for? And really go towards that item. If you have a passion for one thing in dentistry, explore it, try to figure out what it is, and then dive all in. If you want to be a specialist, do it. I'm a big believer in that. And that's what we've built our business on. We've built our business on specialty care. And that, a lot of that comes from my belief of, seeing my dad be a specialist as a neurosurgeon. I applied to the same thing in dentistry. I want to have an endodontist do my root canal. I want to have a periodontist do my implant. I want to have an oral surgeon take out the teeth and do bone grafting where it's needed. And I want my GPs or prosthodontists to do the crown and bridge work. So while we have GPs that do specialty care for convenience of patients, whatever it might be, the one shared value we have in our organization and what attracted me to the organization is the true belief in applying specialty care to our model so that patients get the best quality outcomes that you can have. That's a little bit about our background. I joined the organization 4 years ago. I was the CEO of Great Hill Dental Partners, and Great Hill Dental Partners spun out of a medically based model in 2010. The company was called Harvard Vanguard Dental Harvard Vanguard Medical Associates, and dentistry was part of that medical model. We were affiliated with Harvard University, and lo and behold, things happened where the ACA was passed and dentistry wasn't really part of the business plan moving forward for Harvard. So the doctors that were part of the group, we had 27 of them at the time, decided to partner together and pull the group privately from the Harvard Vanguard group. So in 2010, we built out 5 new facilities. There were 11 partners at the time of the 27 docs, and we built 5 new facilities, moved into those new facilities, you know, borrowed money, raised capital, all those things. And we doubled the size of the organization from 2010 to 2017. At that point, running 5 businesses, the pressures of doing it all yourself took its toll. And we were basically looking at opportunities, and we had grown so much that their DSOs provided an opportunity to either, provide more time for our doctors to see patients, and allowed us to partner with an organization to provide the HR resources that we needed, the marketing resources we needed to continue to grow, the recruiting resources needed to recruit to keep growing our doctor base and a hygiene base. So it was really a match made in heaven, because we built something where we were doing it all our own, but we also wanted to continue to grow, but you know, have that help that you need. And it was a perfect match. So that's basically my background professionally. Last couple of years, I've been lucky enough to be, I was named to the dental board by our governor Baker here, Charlie Baker here, nominated me to the dental board. And this year I'm acting chairman. So that's something I have on the side. So organized dentistry is something that I have a passion for as well.
Yeah, really, really appreciate you walking us through that, Mike. And I love hearing about the impact dentistry can have on patients, that personal example you shared, and sort of the evolution of your career and your organization. So I want to sort of home in on this dual hats you sort of wear, right? So how are you pursuing clinical excellence both as a DSO leader and a practicing dentist?
As a DSO leader, one of the things that I really try to apply are some of the business principles of analytics to clinical care. And what we've done, and without going into a lot of detail in terms of understanding what insurance companies look at and understanding what I would say big medicine looks at, we wanted to apply the same principles to dentistry. What can we look at in our clinical performance that tries to drive best outcomes for patients and can also measure quality? So measuring quality is tough in dentistry. You can provide one patient to 9 different doctors and you can get 9 different treatment plans. But at the end of the day, the ADA was very helpful in producing evidence-based dentistry model, producing journal articles and peer-reviewed journal articles about prevalence of certain diseases in the community. You look at the total number of patients that we see in an annual year, and it blows away a lot of these literature articles that are published on the study that they do. So they might do a study on 10,000 people, yet we're looking at 250 to 300,000 patients in our organization. So we can take what's published and considered as the proper prevalence of utilization of a certain dental code, and we can apply it to our entire network of practices and get a really drive down and drill down into our doctors performing at an acceptable rate. And we've talked to insurance companies and learned what they look at to grade doctors and grade practices. And what we wanted to do was, what can we look at to really drive best patient outcomes? So we look at things like prevalence of exams, frequency of exams. Are patients getting exams who come to our office for cleanings and for perio maintenance? We look at frequency of fluoride. What is the percentage of patients who are getting fluoride? And the number that we end up getting is an average for our company. Where does each practice fall to that average? What is acceptable in the community? You know, the ADA has published articles that 82% of patients would benefit from fluoride. Well, do we have 82% of our patients getting fluoride varnish? No, of course not. but there's an acceptable percentage that we should wrap our heads around that says, you know what, if 82% would benefit and we're at 2% of our patients getting fluoride, something's wrong. If we're at a 50% rate of getting fluoride, you know, that tells a good story. So where do we fall and where do we want to be? We look at the number of extraction sites that get bone grafting. What's an acceptable rate? We look at frequency of perio disease in our practice. The ADA in June, I think it was August of 2018, published that 40% of 30-year-olds or older have periodontal disease. Well, we know that just because you have the disease doesn't basically create an acceptance of treatment. And unfortunately, dentistry doesn't have diagnostic codes to apply alongside of treatment codes. So all we can really measure are what we're treating, not what we're diagnosing as of yet. Hopefully one day soon, we'll parallel medicine and start putting diagnostic codes in, and we'll be able to track the actual true number of patients who have perio in our practice, but right now it's acceptance of treatment. And our goal is 30%. You know, we know that if the prevalence is 40, we're not going to get everyone to accept. So our company goal is 30%, but we always want to challenge ourselves because we see offices that are at 37%, and then we see offices that are at 20%. And what this is these aren't quotas. These are things that tell us a story. You know, does the practice that's at 20%, where is it located? Oh, it's an urban center, city center. The practice sits right between Boston University and Boston College. So you have a lot of grad students, a lot of population that's transient. So it's one of those things that, you know, you have a patient population that might not support a high perio percentage. Whereas another town, another practice might have a perio population that's really high, but their average patient is a much older demographic. So it makes sense. It tells a story. So what we want to do is make sure that the stories that we're telling can be applied to the care that we're providing to make sure we get the best outcomes. So the other things we look at is frequency of a root canal treated tooth getting a crown, especially in the posterior dentition. Anterior dentition, it's not as important, but in the posterior, we want to make sure every root canal that we're doing gets treated properly and treatment goes to completion. We want to make sure every implant that we place gets treated with a crown. So we make sure that are treated with some sort of prosthesis. So we want to make sure that those numbers match up. So these are all clinical measures that we make sure that our doctors get patients back into the chair, complete treatment, and patients get a good outcome. That's how we look at it as a DSO. As a per individual clinically, I think it's really important to want to do well. We have a saying that, you know, do what's right for the patient and everything takes care of itself. If you're able to do that and really drive home and look at each patient individually as if they're your mother, father, brother, sister, wife, you know, whatever it might be, husband, that's the decision. And if you can make that decision for everybody and patients agree to that treatment, you know you're doing the right thing. And I think that's how you have to approach every patient. Everyone gets the same, no matter what insurance they have, you know, what they think they can pay for or their dental IQ may be. We want to provide the best care possible and then work backwards.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the first part of your answer there, you know, it really sounds like DSOs are sort of uniquely positioned within the dental industry to sort of be leaders in clinical excellence, thinking about the size of the organization and those metrics and those clinical sort of decisions you're almost standardizing, right? Can you talk more about that?
Absolutely.
More about why DSOs are in such a unique position?
That's big data. You know, there's
right
DSOs. So I'm speaking for the DSO industry and speaking for 42 North ourselves. And I can tell you what we've done with that information. We've partnered. Number one, I'll go back to the question, to the DSO aspect of things. DSOs have the ability because they're using, for the most part, most are using one platform for patient charting, for basically patient records. And when you have a, you know, one area, one database, you can really dive into what the numbers tell you. But there's an old saying, garbage in is garbage out, quality in is quality out. It starts at the chair. It starts with collecting the right data, collecting the right medical histories. You know, one of the things we look at is how frequently does a diabetic patient need perio treatment? We all know that diabetics have a higher rate of perio disease than the average person in the population. So we should see higher utilization of perio treatment. But in fact, what I can tell you happens is the exact opposite. Diabetic patients tend to have one or two things happen. One, they either have their teeth taken out, so they're no longer getting perio treatment and they're wearing dentures, these are diabetic patients who are not controlled, obviously, or they don't come in routinely and they don't get routine care. So those diabetic patients that take care of themselves, you know, they understand it and they do a great job. But we actually see, unfortunately, a lower utilization of sicker patients. And what has led to us to really investigate is a partnership with, we've partnered with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts, where they have basically worked with us to create a program where we both work together to try to drive their sicker patients back to the dental chair for preventative care and for, I would call it, perio treatments. And why is that? It's because Blue Cross knows that if they're able to, there's an oral systemic health link, and if they're able to help improve the patient's oral health, that they'll save money on the medical claim side of things for their overall health treatment. So we've partnered together. Without going into a ton of detail of the program, they provide additional services for their patients who they've identified as being diabetic, heart disease, cardiac disease, previous head and neck cancer, patients with Sjogren's syndrome. And we're looking at expanding that medical list of conditions and disease to give this additional care that doesn't hit their dental benefit. And by doing so, we're able to partner and try to drive better clinical outcomes. So that's something 42 North has done in conjunction with Blue Cross to try to be a differentiator in the marketplace.
Yeah, no, I mean, that just sounds like a great way to increase access to care for the patients that need it most. Really,
yeah, it's hard because, you know, we contact the patients together. You know, we do outreach, we do education. But, you know, unfortunately, it's what's hard about it is that you're trying to reach the, you know, we all know that 110 million, 120 million people don't go to the dentist every year. You know, why is it? The ADA Health Policy Institute has said it's because of cost, number one, fear, number two. But it's also, you know, the third is dental IQ / health of the existing patient. And that's a big number of people not getting care who need it the most. So we got to find ways to improve the access to care to these individuals. And we both spend a lot of time, you know, we spend time together targeting, you know, these patients that need the routine care and get them in as quickly as possible and get them in as often as possible for that preventative care.
Well, Mike, I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing sort of those insights around that partnership with Blue Cross. Before we sign off here, we're coming up on the close of our time together. Is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know about maintaining clinical excellence as a DSO?
Maintaining clinical excellence is something that you have to want to do. You know, I think what positions ourselves uniquely is that 42 North, our doctors are heavily invested in the organization. So while we're a DSO, we have over 100. So almost a third of our doctors, we have about 270 doctors. We have about 100 equity holders in the organization. And when you have equity holders in the organization, there's an absolute level of pride and level of ownership. When that's there, we hold each other accountable. Having multiple doctors in an office, which is our model. Our model is usually, so they're larger offices. We have 2 to 3 GPs, and you're layering specialty into each office. What's unique about that is that when you have more than one doctor in an office, the level of care, in my belief, is absolutely better than a solo practitioner because we hold each other accountable. When something's, you know, not right, we hold each other accountable to redo the work, to basically say, hey, we're going to tell the patient we're going to redo the work here. We do what's right for the patient. And, you know, in my unique situation being on the dental board, we see complaints and you see, you know, you're evaluating dentistry, and where we see shortfalls is where people try to cut corners. And when you have a team of providers working together to try to provide the best quality care, it's really hard to do that. And we really believe in doctor ownership, doctor leadership. that is what I believe a DSO, if they can combine the two things of providing support to the docs and to the practices and incorporating doctor leadership and ownership, there is no doubt that that a DSO model is the best model of dentistry and the future of dentistry.
Yeah, absolutely, Mike. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. It's been a great conversation.
I really appreciate it, and I really enjoyed my time here today.
Absolutely. I'd also like to thank 42 North Dental for sponsoring this episode. Listeners, you can tune into more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com.